Welcome to the Gnarlcast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and joining me is my co-host.
Great to be here. We have a seriously packed episode today, starting with a massive wake-up call for software supply chains. If you thought your CI/CD pipeline was secure because you had cryptographic signatures in place, the recent TanStack NPM compromise is going to completely ruin your day.
It is a fascinating and terrifying technical breakdown. We're also looking at an existential question for the developer community. If AI agents are writing all your code for you, do you really still need to use Python?
That's a debate that is really heating up. And finally, things are boiling over in the 3D printing world. Bamboo Lab is throwing legal threats at an open source developer, and prominent right-to-repair advocate Lewis Rossman has actually stepped in to foot the legal bill.
It's a great mix of security deep dives, AI philosophy, and open source drama. Let's get right into it. Let's start with what might be one of the most sophisticated supply chain attacks we've seen this year. On May 11, 2026, attackers successfully published 84 malicious versions across 42 different TanStack NPM packages. And what makes this so alarming isn't just the scale, but the mechanism.
Exactly. This wasn't a standard credential stuffing attack where someone guessed a developer's weak password. The attackers chained together three separate vulnerabilities to hijack the project's own legitimate CI/CD pipeline. First, they used a pull request target vulnerability, which is sometimes called a pwn request. Then they used that to execute GitHub Actions cache poisoning.
And that cache poisoning is what allowed them to achieve the third step, which is runtime memory extraction of an OIDC token directly from the GitHub Actions runner. By extracting that token, they essentially became the authorized build system.
Right. And that leads to the most chilling part of this postmortem. Because they hijacked the legitimate pipeline, this malware became the first documented NPM worm to produce valid SLSA build level 3 provenance attestations. For those unfamiliar, SLSA Level 3 is essentially the industry's gold standard blue checkmark for cryptographic code provenance. It proves the code was built by a trusted CI/CD runner. But in this case, the trusted runner was signing off on malicious code.
Which completely subverts the automated trust mechanisms the industry has been racing to adopt over the last few years. If the malware can successfully mimic the legitimate release process and generate valid security attestations, our current detection tools are virtually blind to it.
The threat actors behind this have been identified as the group Team PCP, and this is part of a broader campaign researchers are calling Mini Shai-Hulud. The malware is designed to steal developer credentials and then propagate itself by automatically publishing malicious versions of any other packages the victim happens to have write access to.
It's a true worm. TanStack has deprecated all the affected versions, and the official advice right now is that users need to rotate all credentials reachable from any host where the affected packages were installed. But zooming out, this really shifts the paradigm. It suggests that developers must start treating their local machines and their CI/CD environments as inherently compromised, regardless of the security of the packages they install.
It forces us to ask how we reconcile the need for automated build pipelines with the reality that these pipelines are now high-value targets. The attackers know we rely on SLSA to feel safe, so they didn't attack the code directly, they attacked the machine that grants the safety badge. It's a brilliant, albeit devastating, pivot in supply chain tactics.
Moving from how code is secured to how it's written, there's a fascinating article published on Medium on April 28, 2026 by Noah Mitchum titled, If AI Writes Your Code, Why Use Python? It's a provocative question that strikes at the heart of why Python has dominated software development for the last decade.
To understand the premise, you have to look at the historical trade-off. Python has never been the fastest language at runtime. It's significantly slower than lower-level compiled languages like Rust or Go. But it won the popularity contest because human developer time is expensive and compute time is cheap. Python's fast-to-ship ergonomics made it the industry standard.
But Mitchum argues that as AI agents take over the actual generation of complex code, that human speed advantage is disappearing. If an AI is doing the typing and the logic structuring, why should we accept the runtime performance penalty of Python? Why not just have the AI write in Rust or Go by default?
And he backs this up with a really compelling real-world example from Armin Ronecker, the creator of the popular Python web framework Flask. Ronecker recently demonstrated this shift by using an AI agent to port a Rust library over to Go. The total time for the project was 10 hours, but the actual human effort required from Ronecker? Just 45 minutes.
That is a staggering ratio. If you can get the performance of Go with only 45 minutes of human oversight, the argument for defaulting to Python gets a lot weaker. However, there is a very strong counterargument circulating in the developer community regarding code review.
Right. The counterargument is that code review is becoming the new bottleneck. Humans still have to read, verify, and debug the AI-generated code before it goes to production. And Python's readability, the fact that it almost reads like pseudocode, is a massive asset in that review process. Reading machine-generated Rust is a much heavier cognitive lift.
Which raises the question, should we prioritize languages that are easier for machines to run efficiently, or languages that are easier for humans to audit? If AI gets good enough, maybe AI eventually handles the review process as well, completely removing the human readability requirement.
It's a transitional period. Right now, we still need human eyes on the code, so Python still has value. But Mitchum's point is that the fundamental math of software development is changing. Developer ergonomics used to be the most important metric. In an agentic era, runtime efficiency might reclaim the throne.
Our last deep dive takes us into the hardware space, specifically 3D printing. Bamboo Lab, a company that built a massive amount of its initial success on open source software, is now facing intense backlash after issuing legal threats to an open source developer.
The developer in question is Pavel Yarchak, who created a project called Orca Slicer Bamboo Lab. It was a fork designed to restore certain functionalities and interoperability that Bamboo Lab had restricted. But in May 2026, Yarchak announced he was shuttering the project after receiving direct legal threats from the company.
Bamboo Lab's allegations were quite aggressive. They claimed the fork impersonated their official Bamboo Studio software, bypassed their authorization controls, violated their terms of use, and involved illegal reverse engineering.
This immediately ignited the maker community. Louis Rossman, who is highly visible in the Right to Repair movement, publicly pledged $10,000 to cover Yarchak's legal expenses. Rossman didn't mince words, calling Bamboo Lab's legal claims, quote, bullshit, and arguing this is a classic case of a company using legal intimidation to enforce proprietary lock-in.
Bamboo Lab is defending their actions by claiming the project posed a legitimate security risk to their cloud infrastructure. They cited the potential for the modified software to make unauthorized, high-volume requests that could destabilize their services.
But a lot of people aren't buying that explanation. The tension here is a familiar one. A hardware company uses open-source code to get their product off the ground quickly, builds a loyal user base, and then slowly pivots toward a closed, cloud-dependent ecosystem to monetize and control the platform.
It's the open-source bait and switch. And the question is whether it's reasonable for a company to use legal threats against individual developers who create tools that simply bypass those new cloud restrictions. Does that violate the spirit of the open source licenses the company itself utilized to build its software?
If Bamboo Lab's cloud infrastructure is so fragile that a third-party slicer fork poses a catastrophic security risk, that points to an architectural flaw, not a legal violation. Using lawyers to solve an engineering and community relations problem rarely ends well, especially in a community as fiercely independent as 3D printing.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up.
We've got some interesting updates on federal AI adoption, a historic military deployment, and a major hiring push from the Space Force.
The Space Training and Readiness Command, or STARCOM, is hosting a massive hiring fair on Thursday, May 14th, 2026, in Colorado Springs. They are looking to fill more than 400 civilian positions across engineering, data science, and intelligence analysis.
This is a significant nationwide hiring surge. The Space Force's civilian workforce took a hit with previous budget cuts, dropping about 14%. So this is a major push to rebuild capacity, even as the command's headquarters transitions to Florida.
An architecture studio led by Randy Deutsch recently had students use 22 different AI tools, including Google Flow and Claude Cowork, to completely redesign the 122-acre Brooklyn Marine Terminal.
It's a fascinating look at how architectural education is shifting. They're no longer just teaching legacy software skills, they're teaching students how to manage swarms of AI agents, which brings up huge questions about design authorship and the ethics of training data.
Speaking of AI adoption, the federal government is leaning in. The Office of Personnel Management just launched USA Class, an AI tool to help managers generate job descriptions, while the FDA rolled out ELSA 4.0 to handle data analysis and document generation.
A. U.S. Ambassador Mike Huckabee confirmed on May 12, 2026, that Israel has deployed Iron Dome anti-missile batteries and military personnel to the United Arab Emirates to help defend against Iranian drone and missile attacks.
This is a massive geopolitical shift. It marks the first time the Iron Dome has been operationally deployed outside of Israel or the U.S., and it essentially transforms the diplomatic Abraham Accords into a functional regional military alliance.
Finally, Defense Unicorns is implementing a major architectural change to their open-source PEAT protocol, moving from a blanket CRDT fan-out model to targeted message delivery for tactical edge networks.
It's a necessary evolution for air-gapped military environments. Instead of every node, like a low-powered Jetson device, having to store every single network write, they can now use label selector targeting to ensure only relevant data gets synced.
And that wraps up our briefing for today. Thanks for tuning in.
Be sure to check the show notes for links to all the stories we covered. We'll be back tomorrow with more tech news.
Stay safe out there.
Thank you.